Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! It is the Friday night edition of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. We've got website troubles at headonradionetwork.com. I almost decided not to go tonight on account thereof. But you know what? A lot of people are just connect straight through White Rose Society, so that seemed unfair in the final analysis. I want you to listen to something. I want you to listen very closely. Because this is the sound of justice in America. In 12.3 seconds, that is the sound of 31 rounds being pumped through a New York City standard issue police pistol. Hear it again. Those were the last sounds that Sean Bell ever heard. Sean Bell was murdered by the New York City Police Department in November 2006. Sean Bell was 23 years old. More importantly, Sean Bell was guilty of being an African American out too late at night. Detective Michael Oliver pumped 31 rounds through his service pistol at Sean Bell. Another 19 rounds were fired by Jesquard Isnora, another New York City detective. Sean Bell was due to be married in a matter of hours. It was his bachelor party. By the time that Detectives Cooper and Isnora and Oliver were cleared, Sean Bell's mother was exiting the courtroom today, saying only, "I gotta get out of here." This is justice in America. That was the sound of the delivery of justice in a once great nation turned fascist state. Please understand, no jury ruled on the guilt or innocence of Michael Oliver, Giscard Isnora, and Mark Cooper. Only a judge. Just a judge. The sound you heard was the firing of a pistol by a man named Alexander Jason, an expert witness who was called by the defense, who demonstrated just how little time it took for Detective Oliver to dump 31 rounds in the direction of Sean Bell. That's 31 rounds, dumping the clip and putting another one in. Dumping the clip and not even taking time to reflect in that on what in God's name he was doing. This is sickening. This is a mis... Well, as was said earlier today, justice didn't miscarry. This was an abortion of justice. Justice was aborted. Leroy Gadsden, chair of the Police Community Relations Committee of the Jamaica branch of the NAACP, said this case was not about justice. This case was about the police having a right to be above the law. If the law was in effect here, if the judge had followed the law truly, these officers would have been found guilty. This court, unfortunately, is bankrupt when it comes to justice for people of color. And he spoke truly. Patrick Lynch is president of the New York Police Patrolmen's Benevolent Association. He said, there's no winners, there's no losers in the case. We still have a death that occurred. We still have police officers that have to live with the fact that there was a death involved in their case. But see, Patrick, that's the thing. Sean Bell doesn't have to live with the crimes committed. He got to die for the crimes committed. On the other hand, Justice Arthur Cooperman declared the acquittal of Michael Oliver and Giscard Isnora. In charges of manslaughter, assault, and reckless endangerment. Not even murder. The email begins to roll in. Well, Bob, those kids were guilty. Granted, the charge was existing while black and encountering white New York cops, but they were guilty. Yeah. Yeah. The justice system of New York couldn't even find its way to a charge of second-degree murder, heat of passion murder. No, it was just reckless endangerment and manslaughter. I'm surprised that they decided that Sean Bell was a man. We still have officers that have to live with the fact that there was a death involved in their case. Listen to the use of the passive voice. if there was any honesty in Patrick Lynch's words, it would be, we still have a killing that occurred, and we still have police officers who have to live with the fact that they did the killing. And that the man was innocent. According to the CNN report, an African-American woman shouted at a black police officer, "You can't be proud of wearing that hat. You can't be proud of wearing that badge. You must stop working for the masters. Stand down. Stop working for the masters." Another person said, 50 shots is murder. I don't care what you say. That's what it is. And, of course, this is not the first time that a hail of gunfire has taken down someone of color. Was it Abner Louima? Or Amadou Diallo, who was taken down in an absolute storm of lead, some 40, 50 shots. But the fix was in. It was a boat race. And the judge took care of his own. No jury. No, these defendants chose to be tried by a judge because they knew which way the wind was blowing. And they sit at home tonight comfortable. And the woman that Sean Bell was going to marry, she's not even a widow because they never made it to the wedding. But to be fair, this isn't anomalous. This isn't unique. Police abuses take place all over this nation every day. This one just stunk a little worse than most. Because there were 50 shots. Because the young man had no firearm anywhere near him. He was guilty of being black at night. God Almighty. We talked a lot about Justice Antonin Scalia last night, and get over it. Maybe Justice Cooperman can tell Sean Bell's mama to get over it. 31 shots, 12.3 seconds, and not any time in there for reflection, not even when dumping the first clip and reaching for the second one. No reflection at all. This was not negligent homicide. This was not manslaughter. This was an execution. Because in a fascist police state, that is what cops do. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Kevin from New York. You know I'm going to say something.
Go, man.
I quote Marlon Brando from his great monologue in Apocalypse Now. As long as you have soldiers who are well-fed, not from this country, don't know anything about this country, don't know anything about the culture of the people, they will always be tourists. And this is what a majority of New York City police officers are, tourists. They don't live in the city. They live in the surrounding counties. And they come in, do their shift or their tour duty, and get out.
Really? The NYPD cops mostly don't live in New York?
No. Just like in Washington, D.C., most of the cops don't live in Washington. A lot of them live in West Virginia, believe it or not.
No kidding.
In Maryland and Virginia, they don't live in the cities. Most cops throughout this nation in any big city do not live in the cities they work in.
You know, I always had this vision of the NYPD cop, you know, lives in one of the boroughs.
No.
You know, works at a precinct.
No.
Doesn't have
absolutely not. And they are basically tourists in the city. They do their tour of duty, and I could kind of, you know, and believe it or not, I'm for the police. You know, ever since 9/11, I am for the police, because it takes a big man to charge into a burning building that's about to collapse.
No argument on my part.
Okay.
But this is what happens when you take a police force and you militarize it and you paranoid it.
Yes.
And you stack the deck in its favor.
Yeah, but that culture has been going on for 40, 50 years now. Okay? You ever seen the movie Copland?
Yeah.
Okay, that is your typical policeman. That's probably one of the most realistic police movies ever.
One of the better acting jobs ever turned in by Sylvester Stallone.
Exactly. That and Rocky. However, but that's the reality. Most of them do not live in the city. They don't know the culture of the city. They don't know the essence of the city and the innuendos. And they're tourists.
Yeah, but you know what, Kevin? People like Patrick Lynch, the president of the NY Police Patrolmen's Benevolent Association, needs to keep his yap shut in situations like this.
Patrick lives out in Long Island in Suffolk County, which is at least 50 miles outside the city, you know, close to the Hamptons. And he doesn't know Jack because he comes in and out.
And Mayor Bloomberg, you live there. You've probably seen all this already. A lot of people maybe haven't. Mayor Bloomberg said, and this is a quote, Kevin, an innocent man lost his life, a bride lost her groom, two daughters lost their father, and a mother and a father lost their son. And see, all right, that's all factual. Here's the part that makes the gorge rise. No verdict could ever end the grief that those who knew and loved Sean Bell suffer. You know, it's like, so what the hell?
Well, you know,
why bother?
Bloomberg is just CYAing himself. You know, and I've grown to respect our mayor over the years, but this is a case of him being a politician. And that's the bottom line. He's covering his own behind.
You know, this.
And he's trying to appease everyone.
But see, you can't do that.
Exactly. You have to take a stand every now and then. And he's trying to appease everyone. And you know what? I don't know what his end motive is, but again, it boils down to, and you can't even call this a racial innocent because all three of the policemen are of color.
No, it's not.
It's a cultural, it's like when, you know, black soldiers went into Vietnam and shot up the Viet Cong because they couldn't speak their language.
But there is still a racial element, not because of the color of the skin of the cops, but yeah, because of the color of the skin of the victim.
Well, that too, but it's.
You're up there, you probably look at the Times, the Daily News, the Post, the Sun, whatever.
Yeah.
When was the last time you saw a story about a white guy getting 50 rounds pumped into him?
Never. I've never experienced that in my lifetime.
See, white people are allowed to be out late at 2 o'clock. White people can brawl in bars in Queens or Manhattan or Brooklyn or the Bronx.
Well,
and, you know, they might get rousted, they might get taken to the drunk tank, but they're not going to get stitched with 50 rounds of semi-automatic pistol fire.
Well, I'll tell you this. I used to bartend in a New York City bar, and the scariest night of all is when NYPD will come in. We can tolerate bikers coming in, but NYPD, forget it.
Well, what do you mean, off-duty or something? Or
off-duty because they get drunk, they act stupid, and they have guns. At least bikers, as badass as they may be, pardon my French, they respect the bar.
Well, this is not an isolated incident, Kevin. I think you've made a very valid point about the fact that if you don't live there, you don't necessarily speak the language, so to speak.
Yeah, and, you know, it goes back to any public servant. You know, and I'm a public servant, and, you know, I've come to some realizations with, you know, because I'm a teacher, I don't live the lives these kids do, so I cannot. And that's part of my reason for shifting over to more private schools, because I don't speak the public school kids' language. So I'll be doing a disservice to them in the long run.
I understand that. But the question is, you know, the, I mean, here's this quote from the rest of the quote from Mayor Bloomberg. America is a nation of laws, and though not everyone will agree with the verdicts and opinions issued by the courts, we accept their authority. Do we?
Yeah.
After Bush versus Gore and the complete abortion of justice in that case, after the Lilly Ledbetter case that Mark Levine spoke so eloquently on, that told a woman that she had 6 months from the first moment that she was underpaid to file her claim, even though she had no way of knowing that she was being underpaid, after that 6 months she was screwed, so they did her out of about $400,000 to $500,000. Case after case after case rolls out of the American judicial system, and frankly, no one in their right mind in America would think that the law is any, the courts are any sort of a level playing field.
The thumb is on the scale.
Yeah.
The rich and the powerful.
This is...
And we all know that.
This is just, this is emblematic of a much larger problem. The tragedy is humongous. The tragedy is earth-shaking for the family of Sean Bell and the friends of Sean Bell and the neighborhood of Sean Bell.
Oh, yeah.
But you know what? If anybody tries to rise up and complain about it...
They'll be gunned down, too.
Yeah, they get a stitching with 52, Kevin. And, I mean, let's make no bones about it.
Exactly. But I'll tell you this, Bob, those cops were most likely tourists in the city. You know...
That's what I mean. They're home tonight. They're sitting around watching TV. They're waiting for Dancing with an Idol or some other BS to come on.
Exactly. And, you know, they're living there, you know, and it all boils back to divide and conquer. You know, what's his name before, the show before?
Mark.
He talked about Mark Levine. Talked about how white America, you know, with the Civil War, where 10% of the whites owned slaves and 90% didn't, but yet you had full white participation giving to the Southern cause.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's the same thing with divide and conquer with black people. How many black people on the plantations were given extra privileges for doing the master's role? Where do you think Condoleezza Rice is descended from?
Sharecroppers. Her grandparents were sharecroppers.
Yeah, but, you know, she probably was, you know, that black woman who willingly gave it up to her master.
Well, there are those who say that she gives it up to George.
Well, that too. But, you know...
Well, not that too. Same, same.
Yeah. Well, that too, because she didn't say my husband.
That's true, and I mean that was, you know, that's a Freudian slip of monumental proportions. My husband, I mean the president.
Yeah, put it this way, Bob. Not to be pretentious, but being president, you're the most powerful man in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
You could have got a better looking woman than Condoleezza Rice. I'm sorry.
I will let you do that. You can do that all night long.
I'm sorry.
I do that. I do that. I'm a marked man.
Well, you see, I can say it. I can say it, but he could have had better taste.
Well, you know, our buddy Sandra calls in and talks about her hair. So
yeah. Helmet head, man. You know. Oh God.
But we kid and we joke and stuff. But 12.3 seconds, Kevin.
Yeah.
And a clip change.
Oh yeah.
And no reflection at all. But, I mean, you know, these guys, you know, these were felonies that they were charged with. And they had an opportunity to be tried by a jury of their peers, and they said, oh, hell no.
Well, you know what? if I was in their position, I would try and tilt the scale in my favor too. You know, I can't blame them for doing what they did because it's about survival. But also, before that is professionalism. And hey, you know, they have to come to agreement that there are a they are tourists in this city. I'm willing to bet any amount of money, at least two out of those three cops who fired the rounds on him did not live in this city.
Yeah.
And do not live in this city.
Well, it, yeah.
That's the cold, hard reality.
Hey, look, you know, here's how the cops think. You got several African-American dudes coming out of a strip club that has been under investigation by the NYPD based on complaints of guns, drugs, and prostitution. So, you know, what is it? I guess, I mean, this was all adduced at the trial before the judge. So what, that's a license to kill?
I guess so. You know, like I said, it you know, I'm related to a few, you know, inadvertently black policemen, and they are probably the most patriotic, non-complaining, don't have a problem in the world with America people that I know. Extremely patriotic. You know,
I don't doubt that. I have you know, we have a problem in this country with exactly what constitutes the working definition of patriotism.
Exactly. You know,
sitting down, shutting up, and looking the other way is not
exactly
patriotism.
Exactly. And I've locked horns with, you know, the very close relations that I had who are former NYPD. You know, it's like they're, you know, they are the tokens, and whether they know it or not.
And see, the saddest thing out of this, that's easy to throw around, the saddest thing. No, the saddest thing out of this is that Sean Bell is gone.
Yeah.
And that the woman he was going to marry doesn't have a husband.
Oh, yeah.
But beyond that, let's take into account the fact that this, frankly, makes it more likely that it will happen again.
Oh, yeah.
And it will happen again after that, and again after that, and again after that.
Yeah. Well, we have a militarized police force. You should see Wall Street.
Oh, with the rippling muscles and the roid rage, and yeah.
No, no, not that, but no, I'm talking about the army of police officers with assault weapons around the stock exchange.
Amazing.
With the Nazi helmets on. I was there today.
That's why? Because Osama's gonna drive a car into the, I don't get it.
I don't care. You know, a real clever terrorist can break through whatever. It's more of a symbolic thing to keep people at ease, and it's more of a public relations, because the tourists come in, take their pictures next to an NYPD cop, and, you know, that's all it is. But if a clever terrorist wants to do what they need to do, they'll do it.
There has never been a lock in the world that has been made that will stop the cleverest burglar.
Exactly, because you know what?
But look, out here in the hinterlands, out here in the provinces, Kevin, I noticed something the other day. I was driving through a shopping center that has a Wally World in it. And, you know, I guess you just have to look with new eyes every now and then. Mm-hmm. I forget where we were going. I think it was like the dollar store that my wife likes to go to. It's in the same shopping center there, and we drove by the front of Wally World. And there are these, 5.5 foot tall red concrete pylons.
Oh, yeah.
That are in front of the entrances at both ends of the Super Wally World.
Yeah.
They didn't used to be there. They weren't always there. But you know why they're there now?
Because of terrorists?
Because someone in the Department of Homeland Security has written a memo to someone on the board of directors or one of the operating officers or whatever of Wally World telling them that Osama wants to blow up your store there in Busted Knuckle, West Virginia. You of Wally World are a prime target for tourism.
Oh, God. Well, you know what this reminds me of? Okay, and this has been done before. You know, Wall Street or that area, this is not the first time it's been bombed. It was bombed back in World War One by Germans.
Sure. Yeah, what, the subs off of the subs off the coast or something?
Yeah.
Some shelling or something like that?
J. Edgar Hoover into prominence.
Yeah.
This is what made J. Edgar Hoover, you know, the anarchist, the communist, the German-Americans, anybody who was non-all-American, who came from, like, you know, Central and Eastern Europe.
Well, didn't a tape of Marilyn Monroe that had been secretly ordered by J. Edgar Hoover get auctioned away for some ungodly amount of money a couple of weeks ago?
J. Edgar Hoover, and, oh, God. J. Edgar Hoover has ruined this country and everything about this country and this is what happens when someone...
And he had lousy taste in dresses, too.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about that. He wore Chanel. Chanel was pretty high end.
Oh, God. Who did he get for the fitting? Oh! Never mind.
And he used to hang out at the Plaza Hotel. But this is what happens when you have a top cop in for 50 years.
Yeah. Well, not even so much that, but someone who has absolute, untrammeled, unchecked authority.
Exactly.
And again, just to bring it back to the basic subject at hand, that's what's at work here too: unchecked, untrammeled authority.
Yeah.
By people who are here's another topic that's sort of inside the acorn of this story, and that is the reason these cops were so willing to fire so quickly is because they themselves have been terrorized.
Oh, yeah.
I talk about this a lot, Kevin, and we talk about this a lot. The whole blessed country, with very few exceptions, has been absolutely reduced to water-boweled terror.
Exactly.
The cops are scared of the people. The people are scared of the cops. Everybody's scared of the 6-foot-6-inch Arab on the portable dialysis machine in the cave in Pakistan somewhere. The Muslims are scared of everybody's scared of everybody. And
well, look what the Republican is trying. The Republican Party, the far right, is trying to do. Osama bin Laden, Barack Obama, Barack Hussein Obama. They're trying to morph them into two, into the same guy.
Sure they are.
He's a tall, lanky kind of guy, too. Next thing you know, and I'm willing to bet you any amount of money, Bob, come this summer when he wins the primary, they're going to have him in a turban and a beard.
They've already done
Obama.
Well, okay, not the beard, but they've already done the turban and the, you know, we've already had that flap. It'll be on Republican attack ads across the country, and here's what'll happen. Somebody will look at John McCain and say, John McCain, you need to disavow this. And he'll go, okay, I disavow it. And it'll keep running.
Yeah, but you know what? Like I said, I know, and I thank God every day I moved out of New York for a little while to see how, you know, the province think. It's going to stick. It will stick because they go on two-bit information.
If you can even call it that.
Yeah.
I mean, I love it. There is an ongoing investigation in the Sean Bell case that was launched by the Bush administration United States Attorney's Office for, you know, Manhattan, or in Manhattan. This has been going on since 2006 to see if there were any civil rights violations. Holy cow! A guy gets 50 bullets shot at him, and the U.S. attorney, the Bush appointee U.S. attorney, well, he's not sure if there were any civil rights violation.
Oh, God.
Darn. You know, that's a tough one.
I don't know.
I know. Kevin, thanks a million, brother.
Okay, bro. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Bye now.
Bye.
A very valid point. I had no idea. That's part of the learning curve that is this program for me. Namely, that I didn't know most of the NYPD lives outside of New York City. I grew up in a different place where, you know, the cops lived in the town because there wasn't any other town around for the cops to live in, but you get the idea. But it makes sense. It makes an abundance of sense. Still, yeah. The Bush appointee U.S. attorney isn't sure if there were any civil rights violations in firing 50 bullets at an unarmed man. Just not sure. Too close to call, really. This all had to do with them leaving the bar, closing time, 4 a.m. And I know that somewhere out in white bread America, there's a pasty-faced, puzzled, gutted white guy, even as we speak, going, well, what was they doing out at 4 a.m.? Ain't nothing good goes on at 4 a.m. Why'd he feel like he had to be in a strip club? Didn't he love that woman what he was going to marry? I've been to a million bachelor parties. In a million different strip joints. I find them a little bit embarrassing. Usually, the guys in the party think they're a little bit embarrassing, too. But it's tradition. You gotta do it. And somewhere during the evening, the girls will get the guy up on the stage, and they'll sit him in a chair, and they'll tie his little hands behind the chair, and they'll rub all over him, and there'll be lots of hooting and hollering. You know, but apparently these guys, they weren't thrown out of the club. There were no complaints. There were cops on the inside of the club and cops outside of the club. And as far as I can tell, none of the cops on the inside of the club had a problem with these guys. So they left the club about 4 a.m. As they were leaving the club, an argument broke out. And that's when one of the undercover cops followed the guys, thinking that Joseph Guzman, who was a friend of Sean Bell's, was going to get a gun from Bell's car. And that's where any sort of sanity goes out the window. Bell and Guzman and Trent Benefield got into the car with Sean Bell at the wheel. And that, according to Guzman and Benedict, is when the detectives drew down on them. Guzman and Benedict also testified that none of the plainclothes cops ever identified themselves as police. As far as Bell and his buddies knew, these were just thugs with guns. And you know, when the thugs bring out the guns, the smart money says, get the hell away. There were more than three officers involved in this whole nightmare. Only three were charged with any crime whatsoever. No gun was found anywhere near Sean Bell. This is nothing short of pure, unmitigated murder. And Justice Cooperman today sanctioned it in a hall supposedly dedicated to the concept of justice in New York City. If people should take to the streets and complain about this in New York, they will be gunned down like animals in the street, or gassed, or clubbed. Hell, this looks like a lovely time for the Air Force to bring in its, what's it called, passive, oh, I don't know, passive-aggressive weapon, or what it is, where they microwave the crowd. They've been wanting to test it on some Americans for a long while now. The Queens County District Attorney, Richard A. Brown, whose office mailed in the prosecution, said, "I accept his verdict, and I urge certainly that all fair-skinned people, I mean fair-minded people, in this city to the same. The bottom line is that all of us working together, the law enforcement community, our elected public officials, our individuals who are involved, have got to make certain that that which occurred is never again repeated. Okay? Yay!" Not. Just simply mind-boggling. I urge that all fair-minded people accept the verdict. Holy mackerel. By way of explaining letting the cops off who fired 50 rounds at Sean Bell, Judge Cooperman said, "At times the testimony just didn't make sense." And he didn't like the demeanor of some of the witnesses on the stand. Well, that certainly is a plenty good enough reason to sanction a slaughter, isn't it? So if you've got some thoughts on this, I welcome you to share them. 17 minutes before the hour of 7 o'clock here on the East Coast. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. That's toll free if you need us to pay the freight. If you've got some sort of unlimited long-distance dialing plan through your phone company or your cell company, you're welcome to dial in at 304-658-3333. So far, we know this much. With a few exceptions, they can't get us for talking about it. They can't get us for sharing our disgust. For at least giving air to a demand for real justice in this country. And that's what I invite you to do. Little break. We'll come back. By the way, if you're trying to get to the Head On Radio Network chat room, we're having some website troubles, but you can get into the chat room if you want to. You can shoot me an email, and I will forward you a link whereby you can go directly to chat. I don't know what's wrong with the website, but something is rather decidedly so wrong. So, any way you want to do it. Because, you can't get to the forums, you can't get to the chat, you can't get to anything right now without a direct link. This is America's liberal voice. America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn, and I'm Bob, and we'll be back. About 11 minutes before the hour, and a quick email in from the Internet's sharpest satirist, and just a darn fine factualist, too, namely our buddy Eugene Finnerman at FinnermanWorks.com. Hey, Bob, don't blame Kaiser Wilhelm for bombing Wall Street. He'd retired by popular demand and was living in his chateau in the Netherlands. Beats the hell out of living in a cave in Pakistan. The Wall Street bombing was a terrorist incident that occurred at 12:01 p.m. on September 16, 1920, in the Financial District of New York City. It was the deadliest bomb attack on American soil for 7 years until the Bath School disaster. 38 were killed and 400 persons were injured by the blast. Eugene notes J. Edgar probably attributed the bombing to a vast heterosexual conspiracy. Oh, golly, Eugene. What doesn't Eugene Finnerman know? We really haven't found out yet. We have not plumbed the depths. I don't know if anyone ever will fully plumb the depths of Eugene Finnerman's broad and deep wellspring of knowledge. Try to have a smile here and there. But you know what? Not a lot to smile about. Like everything else in this country, our justice system, founded on the highest of principles that men of the late 18th century were capable of, and I do mean men, and I do mean white men, it has been shattered beyond all recognition by the likes of Scalia and Alito and Thomas and Roberts. And yes, Anthony Kennedy, part of the cabal. And by an absolute legion of so-called conservative judges underneath them on the courts of appeal and the district courts and the magistrates. Because please understand that had, by some miracle, these three killers been convicted, they would have appealed. The appeal would have gone all the way to the highest court in the state of New York. And if at any time along the way they were not, the convictions were not reversed, the case would have found its way to the United States Supreme Court, where the aforementioned Scalia, Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Kennedy would have given these killer cops their freedom. Because that's how they are. You doubt me? Well, Sherman set the Wayback Machine for a few days ago. The Supreme Court ruled... And it mind-boggling, because you have to really, really torment logic to do some of the things that the Supreme Court does these days. The Supreme Court ruled that when the cops, you got to work with me on this because it's a little, they'd be a little bit patient. That when the cops make a stop and they screw up, that even if the initial arrest is bogus and unconstitutional, everything that flows from it is okay. Our chat room moderator and ninja ELO sent this along to me. It's a two-day-old story. The Supreme Court ruled this past Wednesday that police can conduct searches and seize evidence after arrests that... And I love these delightful little attempts at journalism. That sometimes violate state law. Oopsie! By the way, it was a unanimous decision. All nine. The case concerned a man named David Lee Moore, who was pulled over for driving on a suspended license. The violation is a petty crime in Virginia, and it calls for the cops to issue a court summons, in other words, give a ticket and let the guy go. But that's not what city detectives in Portsmouth, Virginia, did. What they did instead was do a full-on arrest of Moore and then subsequently they searched the vehicle and seized, yes, some drugs. Guess who wrote the majority opinion? Why, yes, it's that son of fascism, Antonin Scalia. We reaffirm against a novel challenge what we have signaled for half a century. That when officers have probable cause to believe a person has committed a crime in their presence, that the Fourth Amendment permits them to make an arrest and to search the suspect in order to safeguard evidence and ensure their own safety. The officer safety exception to the Fourth Amendment. No kidding. Now, just for comparison purposes, we're going to take a quick look at the actual text of the Fourth Amendment. And see if it says anything about exceptions or good faith or anything like that. The Fourth Amendment says the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated. Note that. Shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. See, right-wingers and other fascists and conservatives never gripe about court decisions rendered by so-called activist judges when they're running around finding exceptions to some pretty plain language. I mean, that's plain language, isn't it? The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Not in the hands of an activist judge, it's not plain language, because an activist conservative judge, because that's where the activist judges are, an activist judge, first thing he does, he looks and goes, well, what the hell does unreasonable search mean? Which is exactly what happened a couple of days ago to the Constitution and the Fourth Amendment at the hands of a literal direct descendant of a fascist advocate in this country, Antonin Scalia, who said that it is not unreasonable for cops who've pulled a guy over for a suspended license, who are directed by state law to give the guy a ticket and send him on his way. It's not unreasonable for them to roust him out of his car and then declare him, once he's arrested, to be a threat to them and search his automobile. Man, that's some work. That's some exception, that good faith exception. The Virginia Attorney General claimed that an arrest is constitutionally reasonable. See, what did I tell you? What's that mean, that unreasonable? An arrest is constitutionally reasonable if the officers have probable cause to believe a suspect has committed a crime. What crime? Well, see, if your skin is dark, cops have a reasonable constitutional basis for believing that a crime has been committed. Because that is how it is in America. Dig the hair splitting involved here. The Virginia Supreme Court said that the police should have released more and couldn't conduct a search. They said, the Virginia Supreme Court, in its majority opinion, that state law restricted officers to issuing a ticket in exchange for a promise to appear later in court, and the Virginia court dismissed the indictment against Moore. The Virginia Attorney General and later Antonin Scalia, however, decided that even though the cops screwed up, what they did after they screwed up was just fine. Not a word in here about the skin color of David Lee Moore. But it was crack cocaine. And it was Portsmouth, Virginia. And you can almost lay money, well, you could be wrong, that this is another case of draconian justice being applied to an African-American man that would never have been applied to a white man. Because the vast majority of our wrong decisions on criminal principles in the Supreme Court have centered around making sure that the government got to punish the black fella. Because frankly, 21st century Supreme Court justices are actually less advanced than the plantation owners who took part in the drafting of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights in the late 18th century. No joke. So listen, if you're in Virginia and you're out toddling around and you gotta, you know, you suddenly realize that you've got a blinker out, pull the hell over at the nearest auto parts store and fix the damn blinker, because anything can constitute a reason for the police in this police state to roust you, and God only knows what they'll decide that they've found in your trunk. It's not even a consent issue. David Lee Moore didn't have a chance to consent or not consent. On the basis of officer safety, they had to search his entire car, even though nothing in his car could possibly harm them once they had him in irons. This is the America we live in. This is the America that we refuse to change. This is the America that our children and grandchildren will grow up in, one in which the Fourth Amendment is an anachronism, a relic of the 18th century when there was a fleeting dream of freedom in this land. Let's go to the phones. Welcome to the program. Yeah, guess I lost him. It just blows my mind. Just blows my mind. So, all right, I think, let's see if this is the person who we lost a moment ago. Hi, welcome to the program. Hello? We've got a terrible connection here. I don't know who is this? I can't understand your words you're saying. I don't know what's wrong with the connection, but it's definitely gone south. Ring back in. We'll take another run at it, okay? Oh, that was bad. Yeah, this is pointed out by Cossack. The Supreme Court has so eviscerated the Bill of Rights, the Fourth Amendment in particular, that the plain language of the Constitution and Bill of Rights mean little to nothing. And that's kind of what I was getting at. You look at it, and it speaks in plain terms, because you see, the people who framed it understood it. And it was not confusing to them. And they knew what an unreasonable search was. By definition, an unreasonable search, at the way they defined it within the Constitution, was any search that did not meet the parameters contained within the dependent clauses that followed the word unreasonable. Not so for a lot of people who are terrified and hell-bent on making sure that America lives up to its profound urge to maintain its punishment fetish. Let's see if this works any better this time.
Hey, Bob. You hear me?
Yeah, I got you.
This is Albert.
Hey, Albert. How's it going?
Pretty good, bud. Pretty good. And I just got to say that exactly what you said is excellent and right on point. And I think it is true that, how can you arrest somebody and then search their vehicle if they've given you no probable cause? I don't understand that. And I think one of the problems that a lot of people face is that they don't even know their rights. I think that's where we're at here, is a lot of people don't even use the rights, so you don't even know your rights, and it's because you're ignorant of your rights, the cops try to push you as far as they can go, because people, just inherently bow to the authority figure. But if you know your rights, and if you talk to a police officer, like, he understands that you know your rights, they'll pull back, because you're not going to be such an easy target. They'll think you're educated, they'll think, you can afford a lawyer, and that the chances to convict you are low.
How many people, Albert, how many people in this country do you think believe that if the police ask you nicely if they can search your house, you ought to let them?
Probably about 80% of them.
You think it's that low? I'd say it's more like 95.
Well, look at what they were doing in D.C. just recently, where they were, hey, do you have any guns or drugs in your house? We'll give you amnesty if you let us come and search.
Oh, I know.
I mean,
well, look at the kid we talked about last night from down in South Carolina. Now, he may have been plotting something evil and nefarious.
Mm-hmm.
18 years old, no record, absolutely quiet, straight-A student, and his parents were rather shocked when a 10-pound box of ammonium nitrate showed up on their doorstep that he had ordered on eBay.
Okay.
They alerted the cops. The cops came roaring down with their SWAT team, tore the house apart, and declared that the young man's journal indicated that he planned to do a Columbine-style bombing of his high school, which all may be true. I don't know. But having done so, they turned it over to the Bush administration-appointed U.S. attorney in South Carolina, who announced that he would charge the young man with possession of a weapon of mass destruction, which carries a life sentence.
Oh, man.
In other words, having that 10-pound box of fertilizer and some really, really bad thoughts is now the same thing as being Ted Kaczynski. Or the Blind Sheikh. Or Osama bin Laden. Or Timothy McVeigh.
I think if anything, you would try some therapy for a little bit, you think. You'd try something a little less...
That qualifies you as a squishy liberal, Albert.
Yeah, I know.
Because,
you
want to find out what it was that made him want to do that to that school.
Yeah. What made it tick? What makes these people tick? What's this, why do we keep seeing this trend coming?
But no, we don't want to know that. We just want to kill them.
Yeah.
We don't want to learn about it. We just want to kill them and feel better about ourselves.
We want to waterboard them.
Or warehouse them for the... Yeah, let's warehouse the 18-year-old for the rest of his natural-born days.
Well, that's why the police do what they do, too. And that's why they keep us ignorant of the law. That's why, you know, the fastest way to get off a jury is to demonstrate you have some sort of intelligence or an independent mind. That's the fastest way. I've been knocked off two juries because... When they asked me a question, I answered it honestly. And I, you know, because they don't ever ask just a straight up question. They ask it and it's kind of pointed, you know, and so you have to kind of answer it. And if you answer it in a way that they don't like, which is usually, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, oh yeah.
You know, then you're off. But how many, you know, there's a whole, how many people in this country, if you think people are ignorant of their rights in that respect, what about jury nullification of juries saying, nope, this is a bad law?
Oh, that's a bad thing. That's a bad thing.
Oh, yeah. See, that's one of the most important rights we have. That's what's important about being on a jury duty.
But that's also why there's always an instruction in the, you know, the judge sits there and bores the poor jury to tears reading instructions.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, both sides get, you know, the defense and the prosecution get a little nap, you know, maybe go out for a sandwich. No, I'm kidding. About half. But anyway, no, that is, the judge sits there and says, you are not to determine whether or not the law is correct. You are only the finder of fact. You will only apply the facts that you have found to the law that I am about to give to you. You know, like he's Moses.
Yeah.
That's why they do that. They don't want any jury nullification.
Mm-mm. And that's, you know, now you got to blame the wishy-washy liberals in charge of our education system. Because somebody's got to be blamed for the ignorance here. I mean, is it just that it's boring?
No, don't blame the... Wait, no, time out. I'm up off the bench with my... Time! Necktie's just a-flying. You can't blame the liberals on this. I had civics class in high school during the Carter administration. With the beginning of the Reagan administration, the idea of teaching high school students how the government works became a very bad idea. And it was with the Reagan administration that the teaching of civics and government became de-emphasized. So, nope, sorry, that's not a squishy liberal one, Albert. But
no,
I know, you knew it. But
we're sparring, so I got to give you what your opponent's going to throw you.
Yeah, and oddly enough, there is a new movement to start teaching civics again.
Well, I've been hearing about it here and there. I mean, sometimes it's in our local paper, because obviously here in my little area, you know, a local high school is like the main news source of the town, so... So at least they're doing that kind of stuff here, but then again, I live in a different area of the country, and I'm kind of aware of that. I live in a little, I guess it's almost like a little hobbit community where I live. But, this whole deal, though, the thing is, though, bottom line is, you know, even if you're black, if you know your rights and you're black,
that's terrifying.
Yeah.
That is truly terrifying.
Yeah.
At least to the authorities.
Exactly. And, you know, and that's the biggest problem. It don't matter. You can say, well, the drugs are planted, and, you know, that wouldn't be the first time anything like that's happened. You see, that's another whole deal you got to start breaking into is the, well, look at the discrepancy between the two, right? And now look at how easy a conviction like that would be.
Yeah, it's the word of one guy against three or four.
Oh, exactly. Well, I found this in this.
And it doesn't help that every confession in every criminal case is always coerced.
Oh yeah.
And the court has to make a determination because every criminal defendant claims a coerced confession. A lot of them are. Some of them aren't.
Certainly. And I'm not saying that everybody that gets arrested is innocent.
I remember a story I heard one time, Albert. Old boy here in West Virginia was arrested on a charge of, I forget what the charge, probably DUI, or probably, you know, like public intox, something like that. He's in the back seat of the state police cruiser, and the statey didn't say anything to him, not question him or anything. And the old boy says, "I sure could use a cigarette." And thinking quick, the statey says, "Well, I'll trade you a cigarette for a joint." Drunk dude reaches in his pocket and hands a doobie up.
What?
It's a true story. And so he goes from public intox to possession, felony possession of marijuana.
Oh, that's just. Besides sad, that's just funny.
Well, no, that's a violation of the proposed statute, Article 99A, criminal doofus.
Oh man.
You know, you got to admit, guy kind of earned that one.
Yeah, well, you know, it's like, well, there's that one, the famous one on Cops, where the guy had it tucked between his ear, you know, in his little hat. "Have you had anything to drink tonight?" "Nope." He's like, "Oh, smoked any marijuana?" "Nope." He's like, "Well, what's that behind your ear?" "Oh, I was going to smoke that later." You know, people do crucify themselves, ain't no doubt about it. However, there's that other side of it that, you know,
well, there's Sean Bell. This whole thing started out talking about Sean Bell.
Exactly.
No gun, trying to leave the strip joint. Terrified cop says, "Oh, his buddy was going to get a gun out of the car." No, they were trying to get away from the crazy guys that already had the guns.
Well, see, one thing about that, you know, there's pandemonium. That's a kind of a conflict zone. I think one of the descriptions nobody ever should forget, and it's not on the lips of enough people, is Mamadou Diallo. What happened to him?
Well, there's Abner Louima and there's Amadou Diallo, and I'm ashamed of myself that I can't keep the two straight. One was gunned down with something like 75 rounds or something. The other guy was raped by the cops with a broom handle.
Yeah, the other one, Mamadou Diallo, was 41 shots. And the other guy was with the broom handle. See, but the thing is even though, I mean, that's a more these are more famous cases, and that's only known by a few amount of people. I mean, and that stuff is only the tip of the iceberg when we're talking about this. I mean, why do you want to arrest this guy? Why do you want to put him away for 5 to 10 years? Well, because where is he going? He's going into the prison industrial complex. I mean, you know, not only people talk about outsourcing all the time, but what about the insourcing we do with our prisons? We do this.
I mean, it's a growth industry.
Exactly. You know, you've got a captive slave. He's a slave, like the sugarcane industry. I don't know if you've seen anything about Big Sugar, but that, I mean, honestly, that whole issue about Big Sugar, I don't know if you know anything about it, but it was completely under the radar to me. It was one of those things I never even ever thought about. And when I looked at this documentary done up by the CBC called Big Sugar, I sat there and looked at it, and I just, my jaw hit the floor. Because you never realize like how pervasive an industry can be. And if sugar, which nobody even knows about, and how they use slaves and all this other stuff, and just so we can have this cheap sugar, and we pay more than everybody else in the world, if they can do that, what about something that's an active grinding gear of government, like the prison industrial complex? I mean, and then cops go, you know, they try to say, "Oh, we don't do any, racial profiling."
No, they don't do that.
No, what, are you kidding me? Of course they do. How many times have you been pulled over, Bob?
A few.
I myself, same thing. However,
I mean, early in the days of having a driver's license, I didn't know what a speed limit was.
True. Well,
picked up a few of those. I remember one time when the sticker was dead. vehicle inspection. Don't get me started on that. Yeah, stuff like that.
Yeah, but how many times were you searched?
Never.
Exactly. A brown person or a black person can sit there and not have a brake light out, and next thing you know, they're going to jail for 5 to 10. You know, because they're going to get searched. They're probably going to be bullied. They're going to be, you know, they're going to call it back up to make more cops come and look. I mean, see, these are all things. Everything a cop does is, you know, this is important that people know this stuff, that everything they do is made to entrap you. They want to hear yes, yes, yes. They want you to, they always put themselves in a more dominant position than you. And people, you know, and they do that to rattle you. And if you don't know your rights, you're just going to go along with the flow. And you're going to tell them exactly what they want to know. And they're going to, I mean, I've seen it done 100,000 times. I mean, for my friends, it's happened. I mean, they just got in trouble. They were in a hotel, and the cop arrested him before searching the room. How does that happen?
Yeah.
It got done. It got, you know, but we were also talking, you know, it's not only is a confession coercive, what about the whole sentencing of judges? Isn't that coercive? Yeah, if you take this plea, we'll give you a year, you know, probation. But if you fight it, oh, you're going to go away for 10 years. There's another, you know, that's a whole other. So we got people that convicted of crimes, like, well, and then they can be scrubbed off the voter rolls. To me, it seems like if you're watching a pinball machine, and it goes up the little ramp, and the ball spins in a circle, you think someone manufactured that? At least that's how it looks to me.
Albert, the whole thing is manufactured.
Well, certainly. I mean, but it's just, I don't know, it's just the industry aspect of it. It's just that, you know, well, we need 10 more black guys. Oh, we need, you know, X amount of this, you know. Put them in prison. I mean, I live in Wisconsin, as you know. I mean, 75% of our prison population is black, and they only make up 3% of the population in the state.
Is it statistically possible for that portion of the population to be that bad? I would submit to you that it's not.
Mm-hmm. Oh, exactly.
However, if you have selective enforcement, it sure looks like it. And remember, that paragon of literally virtue, William Bennett, who said, you know, if you want to end crime in America, what you need to do is abort all the black babies.
Oh, doesn't that just take your breath away?
What I'm getting at, though, Albert, and I know you know, is that this, these things don't exist. You know, they just pop into our consciousness as isolated incidents. But they're not isolated. They exist on a continuum. You know, I think about the cases that we tried, and those of us, liberals, progressives, decent people, you know, begging members of the U.S. Senate to at least take notice of these things when that creep Alito was being confirmed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wrote letters to Robert Byrd and Jay Rockefeller about the case where Alito said it was okay for the cops to strip search a 9-year-old little girl who had nothing to do whatsoever with the crime being charged. I wrote to them about the case where he said it was okay for a cop to, at about 15 feet distance, with the young man running away and posing no threat, to put a bullet through the back of his head. But could we get Robert Byrd to take notice of that? Oh, hell no. Robert Byrd issued a press release saying that he was going to confirm Alito because I am convinced that Alito will respect our religious liberties. And I'm still sick about it. I'm still pissed about it. I mean, if Robert Byrd peed solid gold in a stream all over West Virginia and everybody became insanely wealthy, I would still not forgive him for his vote in screwing up a generation by putting Samuel Alito, a young man, on the Supreme Court who is going to be there for 50 flipping years. I mean, these guys don't die young.
Oh, they got the good health care. That's for free.
They got the best socialized health care in the world. The stuff that you and me pay for.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing that there's so many layers of drive you crazy in all of this. It drives me batty that we're paying people to screw us.
Yeah.
I've got to be really, really careful here because I'm going to put my foot in it. It's not like prostitution, where there's a little bit of transactional pleasure involved.
Exactly.
We're paying people to destroy our way of life.
Yep. It's a net energy loser. It's, you know, it's corn. It's, you know, it's cannibalism. It's, you know,
it's Chinatown.
Cannibalism. We're in the German couple, those guys ate each other, and they had that whole deal, or the one guy wanted to be eaten. You know, we're that guy that's saying, eat us.
Yeah.
Eat us.
We're Tommy Lee Jones standing in front of the alien screaming, eat me.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I mean, it is. It sucks your breath away. It think about it, though. You understand this. I understand this. Other listeners of the Horn understand this. And that's why when we hear Reverend Wright talk, we understand it. But the thing is, and this is the real sickness, Robert Byrd don't have to pay attention to this stuff, Bob. Who has to pay attention to this is the people that are supposed to be reporting on our airwaves. You know, we don't hold them accountable, okay, or, you know, we don't shut it off, like, you know, shut the tube off. And, you know, so they act like they're totally shocked at Reverend Wright because they don't understand where it is that they're coming from. They don't understand what it's like. And then, you know, I mean, look, Rush Limbaugh is wishing for riots.
Oh, he's not wishing. He's openly advocating.
No, he's planning for riots. Not even so much wishing or ad. He's planning for it.
Now, see, if some little dude with a red bandana around his neck, Albert, said, let's have riot, you know, stand up for your rights, riots in Denver, Homeland Security would be on him like a duck on a June bug.
Yep.
Flush Flemball sits there munching OxyContins and Viagras, honking on Cuban cigars, and calls for open rebellion surrounding the Democratic National Convention, he walks. Well, you know, he's an entertainer. He doesn't really mean that. You know, just ask him. He'll tell you. He's not a political commentator. He's an entertainer. Because that's what every time he gets caught on it, you know, Barack the Magic Negro. My friends, I don't know why you... I am an entertainer.
Uh-huh.
You know, when he tells the caller to call him back when he gets the bone out of his nose, I'm an entertainer.
Uh-huh.
When he says that the NAACP ought to offer classes in robbing liquor stores, I'm an entertainer.
Yeah. When when his listeners mail powdered substances through the mail to Keith Olbermann and John Stewart.
I'm an entertainer.
And so forth, yeah. And, you know, we all know how that is. But,
well, God forbid anybody ever mistake me for an entertainer. No. America has enough entertainment. We're being entertained right out of our rights, Albert.
And no doubt.
And you know it, and I know it. And I don't have time, you know. Well, I'll be a wise ass now and then, but this is and as far as I know, nothing going on the Horn is an entertainment program. You want entertainment? Go watch Britney or Entertainment Tonight or Lindsay Lohan or Dancing with the Millionaire's Nose or whatever. The war is far too serious, and you and I both know, Albert, it's a war, and they're winning.
It is. Yeah.
Largely, they're winning because we won't fight.
Well, I think, yeah. Well, I don't think people are uncomfortable enough to realize. I think it's more and more. That's certainly, I mean, you know, I think, and I do think that this turn, when it does turn, when it finally the switch and the weight catches, and just whack, and it clunks into place, I think it's going to be there for a long time. I think once finally people, you know, it might be, you know, too little, too late, but
I wish I could identify somewhere on the horizon, Albert, that it was that there was that event that was, you know, what? There's a news story out today that the United States, a boat. Let me see if I've got this right. A boat that we subcontracted. If I got that right. Ship, okay, yeah, from Reuters, the headline, ship hired by U.S. military fires warning shots in Persian Gulf.
Mm-hmm.
A cargo ship hired by the United States military fired warning shots at approaching boats in the Gulf, the U.S. Navy said on Friday, underscoring tension in the region. And you know what? Guess what? The price of oil went, oh, Jesus, you know, right through the roof.
Uh-huh.
The Westward Venture cargo ship... Anybody want to do the hard work of tracking down Westward Venture and see how many levels you have to go through before you get to Halliburton or Bechtel or somebody who, you know, who has a buddy who knows a guy who's got a cousin who, chartered by the United States Defense Department, traveling in international waters, when two unidentified small boats approached on Thursday. The boats failed to respond to radio queries, in English, of course, and a warning flare. And then they fired a few bursts of machine guns. Since when do cargo ships have machine guns on them? What the hell is this? Do I remember correctly? You're an old Navy swab?
Yeah. They might have a 50 cal or two on them, but they're probably most likely. I mean, it depends. Are they really a merchant ship or... Yeah, you know, if they did have tanks or something, or like military hardware on them, they probably would be on. So we got to give them that. You know, if they had a tank and, you know, some pirates from Somalia come in and take over the merchant ship, and now they got some top secret gear, we'd probably be upset about that. Go ahead.
Let's see. The Iranian Navy denied that that they had any hand in it. Even the Navy jumped out. The Fifth Fleet said, we cannot speculate on who they are. We just don't know. We have no proof of who they were. Meanwhile, the Department of Defense jumped out and said, it was the Iranians.
Well, you know they want it. But the thing is, it's almost like, you know, at this stage right now, I'm like, it's like looking at your kid wanting to put a two-pronged fork into the outlet. And you just, you know.
But I mean, like, it doesn't this smell like an attempt to set up a Gulf of Tonkin? I mean, come on.
Oh, it's without a doubt. But that's my whole analogy. Do they even understand what they're doing? Do they know what they're doing? They really want this? You know, I mean, honestly, they do that, and they're done. Like, they just, you know, they're probably going to take a bunch of us with them, but they're done. So... I mean, I don't know what to say to you. I mean, I don't know if I can speak in the 250-year history of the United States, but I'm talking about mankind. You know, these guys, it's not just the government. That stuff's an old, you know, construct. I'm talking about mankind. These people in that segment, they're gone. Yeah, I don't know what else to tell you. I mean, if they go into Iran, they're going to put the squeeze on us. Without a doubt.
Well, look at this phony baloney piece of crap with the Syria had a nuclear reactor thing that got run across the bow in the last couple of days. I mean, yep. It's so bad. It is so bad. This whole thing was dummied up so much that a Republican, not a Democrat, God knows Democrats don't do that kind of thing, a Republican had to come out, a guy named Pete Hoekstra, yeah, the Pete Hookah, I don't know, had to come out and blast the whole affair. A Republican.
That's good, though. I mean, you know, you know me, I don't. If they adhere, and no, they get a little, they all get a little greedy. But if they actually adhere to the, you know, responsibility and government account, I don't have a problem with the straight edge conservatives. But
I mean, there's stories out there that just sort of link together. This one's a couple of days old. Yesterday, headline: U.S. arms sales to OPEC at risk over oil, say senators. Democrats in the U.S. Senate stepped up their attacks on OPEC oil producers on Thursday, threatening to block billions of dollars in arms sales to Saudi Arabia if they fail to take action to tame record oil prices.
That's a warning shot to Hugo.
Well, yeah, sure it is, but consider that that's a story from yesterday, and today you've got this contracted cargo ship hauling God knows what from God knows where to God knows where, maybe chock full of arms to slip in the dark and still of the night and try to arm the resistance in Iran or something equally stupid.
That's a possibility as well. Yeah, well.
I mean, yeah. Let's see. I'm trying to find the Pete Hoekstra thing. Yeah, here it is. The Bush administration put out those photos of what they said was a nuclear reactor, right?
Yeah.
And then they put out the pictures of where the nuclear reactor was after Israel flew in and destroyed it. Bear in mind that nobody had fired a shot at Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And Pete Hoekstra said that the briefing that they got from the administration yesterday came, in his words, 8 months later than what it should have been, and that trust between the White House and the Congress does not exist.
Yep.
And he called it a massive spin operation by the administration, of which Bill O'Reilly would have been proud.
Ooh.
A Republican said that.
Ooh.
And he said it on Fox.
Ooh. That's getting catty.
but he's right.
No,
this is Colin Powell showing the cartoons of the mobile weapons labs at the United Nations. I mean, nope. It's a satellite image of a square building followed by a satellite image of a place that doesn't have a square building on it.
With a cartoon truck and a big explosion that says BAM.
Just about. And, you know, well, obviously no one complained about it because those Syrians were caught red-handed.
Yeah.
Well, the Syrians didn't complain about it because the Syrians aren't exactly hungry to be nuked. Of course, there were reports some months back that Israel used a nuke to do it.
Really?
Yeah. And, of course, Israel, meanwhile, has never, ever promised not to use nuclear weapons in a first-strike capacity. See, this is the thing that gets me, Albert. I personally don't have a dog in the Middle Eastern hunt.
Yep.
Except where Iraq, Iran, and Afghanistan are concerned.
Mm-hmm.
If Egypt, Israel, Jordan, and Syria, and Lebanon all want to shoot each other to pieces, it's a tragedy, but I don't have a dog in the hunt. But you got a country that has never acknowledged, but everyone knows, has more than 200 thermonuclear weapons.
Yep.
And,
right.
And nobody, no other countries are supposed to be nervous about that?
No, because then you're anti-Semitic.
Well, and you know, that's the other thing. There's, if you look, you know, we were really upset with the North Koreans for getting nukes because they're crazy. And we're really upset with the Pakistanis for getting nukes because they're crazy. And the Indians, crazy.
Got mangoes.
Yeah, right. March Mango Madness. But the fact of the matter is, what it boils down to is only white people can be trusted to have nuclear weapons. Now, bear in mind, only white people have ever used nuclear weapons. But only white people can be trusted to have nukes. If your neighbor happens to have 200 nuclear weapons, you're supposed to trust that they'll never use them on you because they're white. I mean, look at it. Look at it.
Like having the biggest guns you can.
I mean, we're not all broke up about South Africa having nukes. Of course, that was the white South African regime that was hell-bent on having those. The French has them. We're not burned up about it. Brits, Russians, well, you know, I mean, as long as they're white, they can have the nukes, because they're trustworthy.
And they've detonated the biggest, so.
Right. But, you know, Iran is crazy for wanting to have a nuclear deterrent to keep Israel from blowing them off the map.
Yep.
Syria is crazy to want a nuclear deterrent to keep Israel or the United States from blowing it off the map. You know, Pakistan, meanwhile, well, you know, we turned a blind eye to it, and AQ Khan did all of that stuff. But, you know, it's okay, because Pervez Musharraf is really a fun guy at heart. And we're sure that he'll keep an iron fist on Pakistan and keep the religious fundamentalists, you know, the really crazy people, from getting hold of him. Because, see, that's when it gets a little dicey, Albert. Because if the crazy fundamentalist people in Pakistan get hold of the nuclear arsenal, they're going to nuke not Israel. They're going to nuke Iran, because they hate Iran.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is it? And yet you can't get any of this analysis out into the mainstream media. All you can get is Ahmadinejad said he wants to push Israel into the sea. It's going to take a mighty damn big bulldozer, isn't it?
Exactly. That's just beautiful. Yeah, you know, but the thing is, it's like, you know, right now, certainly, we're picking the easy fruit by getting the countries, and, you know, we don't want them to have a nuke, because it is a barb. However, if we wanted Pakistan, and when it comes down to the time when if we, in our glorious neocon agenda, and we've freed Iraq and Israel and Iraq are one country. Who knows, whatever their fantasy is. Iraq and Iran, all that stuff is now Israel. You know, if they could ever succeed in this fantasy, we could take over any other country I mean, the only countries that could probably detect besides are the ones that already have the nukes. You know, like Iran's never going to detect. If we launch a nuclear attack on them, if we launch an attack on Pakistan, if we launch an attack on even India,
just to give free flight to our absolute most paranoid fantasies, how hard would it be for the United States to, say, nuke Iran and then claim that they had a nuclear accident at one of their facilities?
That'd be pretty rough, I think. I mean,
this is the Bush administration. I mean, can't you hear that? Don't you know that brief has already been written by that guy that apparently sits around huffing decon all day, Douglas Feith?
Yeah.
You know, Richard Addington, John Yoo, these war criminals that are, again, the guys that we're paying to screw us.
Mm-hmm.
They've every crazy thing that I've ever mentioned on this program, they've already worked on.
Yep. Well, it's their wet dream. But at the same, on the same flip side, you know, they would probably use those tungsten rods in the satellites to kind of, yeah, like they're like a little meteor. They wouldn't put off any radiation. They wouldn't want to put off radiation, because then that would kind of give the game up, because then you'd know where the radiation or
because it has signatures and
the signatures and stuff like that. So, but you know, not to be a total nuclear dork on you, but. I mean, I think we're going to keep seeing this. The third or the fourth little skirmish crap with Iran, right? You had the Marines that got kidnapped.
Well, you had the Marines, you had the British guys, you had the really scary Zodiac inflatable boat incident, and now this.
So...
They want, God, Albert, they want a war with Iran so bad that they can't keep the drool from running out of their mouths, even if they've got their mouth closed.
Yeah. Yeah, they might even cancel the election because of it.
That's not crazy. Hey, Albert, I got to move along, brother.
All right, bud. Hey, take care.
Have a great weekend. Hoist one back for me.
Oh, same here.
Hey, how's the business plan coming? Oh, darn. Lost to Albert. Wanted to see how the pizza parlor was coming. I love that idea. We'll roll along. Hi, who have I got?
Hey, it's Vince.
Hey, Vince, what's up, brother?
Not much. Got a new headset. How can you hear me?
Oh, you sound awesome.
Awesome?
Yeah. Yeah, you're sounding really good.
Dude, I can't take much more of this.
You're mad at me?
No, not you. This country, man. I had to sit there and listen to Bush the other day at that NAFTA thing.
Yeah.
Sit there and talk about how much, you know, we're in a slowdown, not a recession. We're not in a recession.
Yeah, that was one to make you run around the screen just with your hands flailing in the air going,
well, yeah, we're so much not in a recession that, you know, oil prices are such not an issue that I not got laid off from my job yesterday.
I saw that in the chat room. That well and truly sucks.
Well, you know, gas is $3.50 a gallon. everything we did at my company was all petroleum based. All the chemicals we put out and everything.
Yeah, well, I said that a few nights ago. You know, you can't cast your eye about your room without seeing, you know, a few barrels of petroleum laying around. The plastic that's the housing for my computer monitors here. Guess what? You know, petroleum. It goes.
Well, and then to top that off, my father-in-law also lost his job recently. Not due to the economy per se, but I'm really not going to go into that. It's not really my business to discuss his, but he's ultra conservative, and ever since he's gotten home, it's just been one thing after another. Me and my mother-in-law were actually starting to get along, and now I've been teaching my sister-in-law how to drive and everything, and now she's having to listen every time she goes home about, so is he trying to convert you to his godless liberal heathen ways?
Oh, what a load up.
I'm not kidding you. I wish I was, man.
How you going to live with it, brother?
Huh?
How you going to live with it? How you going to deal with it?
I have no flipping idea. It's been a rough week. Needed to talk to somebody, so I thought I'd call in.
Well, you know, you'll be glad to know that as a result of the little speedboat incident in the Gulf today with the with the contracted out cargo ship with the machine guns on it that we hired.
When the hell did cargo ships start being armed?
Well, there's that. That as a result of that, crude oil jumped $3 a barrel on that news. Crude oil for June delivery, last I saw on this story, was up $3.04, that's 2.6% at $119.10 a barrel.
Dude, there's got to be a breaking point here somewhere.
There's not. Well, you know, I wonder sometimes, Vince, if we've already passed it. It's kind of like peak oil.
Obviously not, because I'm still seeing people outside my window going about their business, you know, doing what they can do. I've yet to see anybody in my area say, let's go to Washington and protest or something. Everybody around here, they sit around, they whine, they moan, they complain.
Yeah, but Vince, you're never going to hear, let's go to Washington and protest. You're never going to hear that. I'm not trying to be a wet blanket or anything, but the guys that just recently put the 922-inch widescreen liquid plasma high-definition Blu-ray television on their wall on the credit card are not going to go march on Washington. They're just not.
Where's my liquid crystal display?
Well, part of the reason that you're here is because you don't have one, and therefore you have not been drugged. Barack Obama was right. He just used the wrong damn words.
Oh, what, the bitter thing?
Yeah, it causes them to cling to fundamentalism It causes them to cling to material goods. You know, because maybe when you lose your good job, you figure you're screwed anyway, so you go ahead and max out the credit card and get the TV while you can.
Yeah, if my credit didn't suck so bad, maybe I'd do that.
Yeah, but you get what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I do. Dude, the economy in this area already sucked to begin with, and now with the recession, I don't care what Raisin Brain says we're in or we're not. This recession that we're in, it's just getting worse, and I already had one of the highest paying jobs we have around here, and I was barely making ends meet. I mean, we've run the numbers, you know, I don't want anybody to panic or, you know, necessarily feel sorry for me. We'll be all right in the meantime, but I mean, they're just, even if I find another job, it's going to be flipping burgers or something. There just ain't nothing around here, not unless you got some sort of degree, and even then the pickings are slim.
I guess what I'm trying to get across here, Vince, is that this is deliberate. I keep talking about the things that my dad used to say to me as I was growing up, because the older I get and now that I'm without him, it's what I still have of him. And it's all the times that he looked at me and said, please, for the love of God, take me seriously. The Republican Party wants a two-class system in this country. They want a very small number of very rich and a very large number of very poor. This is not an accident. NAFTA was not an accident. The outsourcing of jobs. You know, you hear him say, oh, we didn't know that was going to happen with NAFTA. We didn't know he was going to lose all our jobs. Shut up. Quit lying. It was intended. It wasn't meant to raise up Mexican wages. It was meant to drive down American ones.
Yeah, and look who's watched that passed on.
Sure. But please understand, the destruction of the middle class is a planned event. Just like I've said so many times, Vince, the Republicans, the Social Security was passed during the FDR administration without a single Republican vote. Not one in either House of Congress. And what few Republicans were in Congress after the debacle that they had turned the American economy, the shambles they'd turned the American economy into, they looked at each other and they said, we'll remember, and someday we'll kill this. And they told their sons, and their sons told the grandsons, and the grandsons told the great-grandsons, and no Republican goes to Washington without somewhere in the back of his black little heart, his evil little soul, his vile little mind, he's got some notion that maybe finally we can kill Social Security. They hate unemployment compensation. They hate... Jesus, what don't they hate workers' compensation. They hate it all. And they aim to kill it. And the same thing applies to the rise of the middle class. Because the middle class rose, Vince. Oh, God, I'm lecturing. I'm sorry. I'll finish in a minute. The middle class rose on the rise of trade unions and labor unions. Okay? My great-grandfather lived in slavery. All right, I may be a white guy, but my great-grandfather was a slave. He lived in the house he was told to live in. He went to work when he was told to go to work. He sat down when he was told to sit down. He stood up when he was told to stand. What pay he received was paid in funny money that he couldn't spend anywhere but the company store. And they finally got sick of it and formed a union. And when the union was formed, the middle class began to grow. And it grew all the way up through the Eisenhower administration, where union membership peaked. And then it held steady for a little while, and with the Nixon administration, it and real wages for the middle class and lower class began the long, steady decline that it's been on ever since.
Well, fine, if we know what happened and we know what's going on and we know what their plan is, why the hell can't we get us some sort of plan? I am sick and tired of listening to Barack and Hillary snipe and complain at each other about who's going to, you know, put their pants on better when they get to the White House. You know, I want to know what the heck we're going to do at this point.
They're in a,
I'm not hearing a whole lot of that.
Vince, they're in a quandary because they can't talk about real issues. If either one of them comes out and says, I want every American to be able to join a union if they want to, the Republican attack machine and every media outlet in this country will attack them as Bolsheviks. I'm not joking. I mean, we had the Employee Free Choice Act in the Senate last year, and it was killed by a bunch of Republicans who said that allowing a person to check a box on a card and turn it in and have that qualify as his desire to join a union destroyed his right to a secret ballot. No kidding. Survey after survey after survey says that around 70-80% of the people who work for a living in the United States, if they could join a union, would join a union. And the Republican Party and the money people and the corporations are sick. I mean sick at the very thought of an organized America. Not because it means they can't make any money anymore, but because it means they might make a little less money.
Yeah, if I hear about oil companies making record profits again, I swear to God, I'm going, and I'm not going to say that because Agent Fred is probably listening.
They're there every night. We've got listeners at the National Security Administration. Wish I was kidding.
Yeah, well,
ain't.
My question to them is, don't you people have any freaking hearts?
No, they don't. Because those guys are getting paid $70,000, $80,000, $90,000 a year to sit around and listen to me. And they've got a meaningful retirement. They've got a high-quality pension. They've got the best socialized medicine that this country can provide. And they're getting it all for sitting there and watching the Uniblab 9000 log calls that come into this little program and others like it. Remember, as long as crime is up, the cops don't have to worry about layoffs. Remember, as long as crime is up, the guards at the prison have job security. As long as we have undereducated juvenile delinquents coming out of economically desperate circumstances, the juvenile probation officers have a job. Figure it out, Vince, you know? I mean, I'm not talking down. I'm not being condescending. I'm just throwing it out there.
I understand all
this. I keep saying all night long, this is not accidental.
No.
Yeah?
The solution is not going to be accidental either, and I'm not hearing any solution. And that's what's ticking me off right now.
We have a hope, among other things, that if we retain the majority in Congress in November, and if we can get a Democratic president, that a Democratic president will sign a Free Choice Act for American workers. Then people can join unions. Then their wages will be used to go in to union-funded health care and pension plans. Then they'll have health care and they'll lighten the burden on the health care crisis in this country. And I mean a union for the kid flipping burgers at McDonald's, and a union for the person who's wandering the floors at Wally World. Because if you've got legal force behind it, you can make it stick. So that's a fairly elegantly simple solution, and it really does solve a lot of problems. Because then solving the problem of the uninsured in America decreases significantly. If anybody working for a living can join a union, You see what I mean?
Uh-huh. And what happens if McCain somehow, God forbid, ends up president? We're screwed.
Yeah, we are. I mean, I in 2004, I said that it was the most important presidential election of our lifetime. In 2000, I said it was the most important presidential of our election of our lifetime. Each presidential election becomes a little bit more important because with each presidential election, the risk of us not being able to step back from the brink of the abyss, Vince, grows exponentially greater.
Aren't we already screwed, though? You've got Anthony, whatever the frack his name is, up there on the...
No, because Congress has the power to...
The Fourth Amendment doesn't matter anymore.
No, Congress has the power to fix that stuff. The Senate of the United States tried to fix the Lilly Ledbetter versus Goodyear tire and rubber case the other day. That was she was the woman who worked for 20 or 30 years for Goodyear in middle management. And when she finally found out that she had been screwed by virtue of pay discrimination, when she finally found out, she filed suit against Goodyear. And she proved her case. But the Supreme Court, Vince, ruled that because Lilly Ledbetter had not filed her claim within 6 months of the first day that they they cheated on her, that her claim was barred. Okay? Now, she had no idea they were cheating on her, because she simply didn't know. But Scalia and the rest of the thugs said that, well, you know, because... Well, all they were doing was protecting corporate America. So the Senate had a bill that would have fixed that ruling. It failed in the Senate because of a bunch of godless, soulless, motherless Republicans. Hillary and Barack both came back to vote on it. John McCain didn't show up. Although he did say later that he would have voted against it.
I was going to say, he knew it was already taken care of. Let Hillary and Obama take time off from the campaign so he can go out and convert some more Americans to his stupid ideas.
And ultimately, that's the question. You know, how many Americans will bite on the idea that he's the only thing standing between us and the anarchy that will grip the nation if a black man or a white woman is in the White House?
I'm afraid far too many.
America, at this juncture, Vince, sad to say, America stands at the mercy of its least intelligent citizens. We are at the mercy of morons.
I wish I could move.
The rubes are running the midway, and the inmates are running the asylum.
Nice.
So, you know,
I take up all your time tonight.
So, you know, look, brother, hang in there. I mean,
I'm trying.
You just gotta. You can't give up. You can't run away. And you know what? There's no security in saying I'm not going to pay attention to this crap anymore. I'm going to go watch Dancing with the Millionaires.
I couldn't watch that anyway because I don't have any cable.
Lucky you.
Yeah, I didn't miss it when I shut it off.
I've said a million. I watch 1 hour of television a week, and it's not doing me any harm.
I just get everything off the internet.
Yeah, watch what you want. Never mind the ads.
There you go.
All right, Vince. Have a great weekend.
I'll try.
Best you can.
See you later, Bob.
Best you can. Later.
Bye.
Our buddy Vince in Georgia. This in from our pal Marty. It's not just the teaching of civics in high school, Bob, but no longer teaching critical thinking. Kids aren't being taught, they're being programmed. If they're taught, they might learn to think. Can't have that. As far as the call to renew the teaching of civics, I want to know who's determining the content of the course. Well, that is a problem, Marty, because, you know, we've got the story from a couple of weeks ago from the kid in New Jersey who called BS on his civics textbook that was written by a couple of the hardcore conservatives, and it had all kinds of BS conservative talking points in it, and the publisher went, what, you ain't no. Yeah, Bob, as I recall, the Fourth Amendment, and as you read it, contains not word one about a good faith exception. The good faith exception has been created out of whole cloth by Supreme Court decisions. The Supreme Court decisions invariably accrue to the benefit of the established order and militate against the rights of the people. Cossack. Yeah, you're right, Cossack. You want to see the... Look, you know, just because you're not a lawyer, don't think that you can't read law. There was a time in this country when our lawyers came from reading law. There was a time in this country when there was not a single law school. The way you became a lawyer was you went to another lawyer, an older lawyer, and you did what was called reading law. Until you were able to be certified by whatever local bar you had. Well, the lawyers union, and it is a union. That's the funny thing. The rich people get unions. The guy that works at Walmart, the woman who stocks shelves at Walmart, she can't have a union, but the damn doctors and lawyers can have the strongest unions on earth, the AMA and the ABA. You can read law. You can learn this stuff for yourself. Some of it's a little bit of a pain in the ass, and you might have to go out and buy yourself a copy of Black's Law Dictionary to get through the priestly language, because that's what lawyers are. Lawyers are secular priests. All right? The entire body of the Anglo-Saxon legal tradition arises out of the church and the monarchy. And the legal profession in this country is a secular priesthood with magic words that you're not supposed to understand. All right? You can read law. You can learn law. You want to learn about the good faith exception to the Fourth Amendment? Use the internet for something besides game playing. Use it for the amazing resource that it is. Go and read a case, a Supreme Court case. You can Google it up. It won't be hard at all. Read a case called U.S. v. Leon, L-E-O-N, United States versus Leon. And it is in that case where you see a good faith exception crafted by activist conservative right-wing judges to the Constitution of the United States and the Fourth Amendment. Read it. Comprehend it. You can. Don't let anybody tell you you can't. Make the effort. It's worth it. You know, by way of comparison, I need a little break here, but we'll wait just a minute before we take it. I want to share something with you. Again, this came in from ELO. I want you to get an idea of the difference between what happens when the cops murder a guy and when a guy shoots a cop. There was a pretrial conference set for this past April 23rd. That would be Wednesday, this past. In Philly. The pretrial conference was for a man named William Barnes. William Barnes went to prison many years ago. He shot a cop in 1966. After that shooting, he served 15 years for the shooting. He served his debt to society and was released. William Barnes is 71 years old now. He shot Officer Walter Barkley on November the 27th. 1966. This stuff matters. That's why I keep, you know, I'm just trying to get it square. William Barnes has had two prior heart attacks. He is on a permanent heart monitor. Last August, Walter Barkley, the police officer he shot, died. Passed away at the age of 64. 7 months after he was dead and buried, the state had the dead cop dug up, and they did an autopsy. The cop had suffered, according to his sister, from pneumonia and bed sores and recurrent infections. He had piss poor care from his caregivers. You don't have bed sores without poor care. He died at 64. And Wednesday there was a pretrial conference for William Barnes, who has already served his debt to society. There was a pretrial conference for William Barnes on a charge of murdering Walter Barkley. No, really. So here, in stark relief, you have parallel cases. One in which the police fire 50 rounds at a group of three African American men at 4 a.m. in, I believe, Queens, killing Sean Bell, 23 years old, due to be married only hours later. He didn't wait decades to die. He died right there, Sean Bell. Not too many miles south of New York City, however, in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, a 71-year-old man is awaiting murder charges for a police officer who was neglected to death by his caregivers. You figure it out, because it's a little past me. We'll be back after a short break with the rest of tonight's program. You're welcome to join in. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. Direct dial 304-658-3333. This is America's liberal voice. This is The Horn.
This next record is dedicated to some personal friends of mine, the LAPD. For every cop that has ever taken advantage of somebody, beat them down or hurt them because they got long hair, listened to the wrong kind of music, wrong color, whatever they thought was the reason to do it, for every one of those fucking police, I'd like to take a pig out here in this parking lot and shoot them in their motherfucking face.
Long ass night, and your neck looks just right. Now my adrenaline's pumping. believe in.
Sean Bell. Before anybody has an aneurysm and says, I can't believe you'd play that song. That was so not nice. You said you're nonviolent. I am nonviolent. Me being nonviolent is not the problem. The problem is the violent people. And a portion of the violent people are comprised of the police in this country. All right? Get that straight right now. If anybody, it does happen to be having a hissy about this right now, let's do a little comparison shopping, if you will. Now, you heard that song, and you know what? I generally don't play songs with a lot of obscenity in them. Try to keep it clean here. But you know what? When a 23-year-old kid, young man, gets gunned down in a hail of 50 bullets, I really have to question what is obscene. And that was the point of playing that song. Oh, do you remember when the song was released and, you know, the President of the Police Benevolent Association, I can't believe this man ought not be able to, this is an incitement. When all that the babbling white guys on television were doing was displaying their manifest ignorance. The song isn't about killing cops. It is about giving voice to the voiceless. It is about speaking the names of the dead and the maimed who have been so by the police. And of course, the song has sound effects of gunfire. Guess what? No real humans were harmed in the firing of those guns. On the other hand, compare. Because this is a real gun, and these are real gun shots. That's what it sounded like when Sean Bell had his life taken from him by murderers. No less murderers for having had a badge that allowed them to do the murdering. He didn't have a gun. He did not have a weapon. He was trying to get away from the people who had the weapons, for the love of Jesus. And the judge who tried the case said,
I didn't like some of the witnesses.
Gotta wonder how he felt about Sean Bell. Because he didn't get a chance to have his credibility judged. That's why that song ran. Because you see, on terrestrial censored buggy whip radio, that song is considered indecent. However, on right-wing radio shows all over this country, and it has already begun, the justification for the murder of Sean Bell, 50 rounds! The justification for the murder of Sean Bell is not considered indecent or obscene. What do they say in 1L? What's one of the first stupid little lines that you learn?
Hard cases make bad law.
Man. In regard to the Philly story, I don't know. Email rolls in. What race was the cop? Mr. Barclay. What race was Mr. Barnes? Mr. Vick, meanwhile, goes to jail for owning a home where they were having dog fights. Somehow the scales of justice seem rather out of balance, don't they? Wildly out of balance. About 30 minutes left in the program, Friday night, and if you want to get in on the conversation, please feel free to do so. I don't just do things. Things have a reason. Pointing out hypocrisy and pointing out murderous intent is part of it. Now, see, they said that Ice-T was the inciting riot with that song. Didn't tell anybody to go do anything. On the other hand, the oxymoron Flush Flimball is on a radio station in virtually every town in America calling for people to riot at the Democratic National Convention between August the 24th and 28th because it would be politically good for the Repiglicans. You know, the Law and Order Party. Tell me who the thugs are. Welcome to the program.
Evening, Bob.
Hey, Luke.
Well, let's see. I took a quick look on the internet, and the only thing I can find out about the Westward Venture is it's owned by a company called Totem Ocean Trailer Express, Tote Incorporated. It's an Alaskan-based company.
That's just weird. So did they buy the boat there, or did they sail it from Alaska? Are they looking for new salmon grounds, do you think, in the Persian Gulf?
Well, like I said, apparently it's been leased. You go to their site, you know, the for Tote Incorporated, and it's got the listing of who the officers and everything. I didn't see anybody overtly, I noticed, connected to Halliburton or KBR or anything, but you never know. You know how that is through a few dummy corporations.
Sure. Or well, like, look, hey, who's the wait, Luke?
Yeah, right.
Who's the king of the dummy corporation?
His last name is McGee, M-A-G-E-E.
King of the dummy corporation? No. I mean, the king of dummy corporations is the Central Intelligence Agency.
Oh, okay, yeah.
You know, one of the planes, it was interesting. I had a link. It went back to December of 07. Had a link the other day that I was looking at. It turns out one of the planes that was used for the extraordinary rendition by the CIA to have people tortured.
That went nowhere and stopped in no countries.
Right. It crashed in Mexico a few months back. Care to guess what was on it?
Ooh. Tails of things? Or?
No, bundles of stuff. Let's say it was a fresh load of powder for the nasal skiers.
Oh, okay. I thought it may have been a little wacky weed or something, too. You never know.
No, but remember how Iran-Contra opened?
Mm-hmm.
Remember the plane crash? Remember people with names like Eugene Hassenfuss?
You know, I got a question.
Mm-hmm.
When did our military and our intelligence system start being run by somebody named Wile E. Coyote?
I know. And I mean, but see, that's the funny thing. This will, I'm not sure, I imagine. You know, you're much better at watching television than I am. Has the Iranian incident been reported breathlessly on all the networks so far?
I did not hardly see anything on it. I want to think I saw a blurb on like headline news or something where they were talking about the, you know, and of course they of course identified the ships as Iranian, you know, that were fired upon.
Yeah, which they had to retract in a real hurry.
Yeah. Oh, you were talking a minute ago about lawyers and doctors.
Mm-hmm.
And it struck me all of a sudden, isn't it amazing? These are two professions that both love to use the Latin language, a language that no one speaks.
Which is part of the reason that I keep advocating for a return to instruction in Latin.
Yep.
You have it, you know, you get a couple of years of Latin in high school, and French and Italian and Spanish are a walk in the park.
Yeah, it's well, like I say, we've all, and one thing of our schools have always been bad about starting languages. They need to start it earlier.
Well, yeah, like, you know, fourth grade, but we can't do that because then we might be having a bilingual nation, and that's un-American.
You'd be them one of them multiculturalists. You know, you want to give us another culture besides the American culture.
It is the job of the world to speak languages that Americans can understand. That's why God founded the United States of America.
Well, you know how it is. We'll just have a class and teach everybody to speak louder. You know, that's how it works. Just keep speaking it louder and louder, and, you know, eventually somebody will understand you.
I said, ¿Dónde está la bathroom? Huh?
Take it out and spray down the floor. They'll figure it out. You know how it is.
Jesus. Yeah, I know. I know.
It's one of those things. It's like sometimes on some of these things, it's like, oh, God.
Oh, by the way, on the CNN website, just because I know you love this kind of stuff, Luke, The acquittal of the guys who blew away Sean Bell has now been bumped from first position.
Uh-oh, what's bumped it off of the hole now?
Two dead as semi rams Chicago train station.
Well, you know what originally knocked it off, don't you, earlier this evening?
What?
Swimmer killed by shark.
Yeah, you know, I always worry now when the sharks start eating people, because that means the Bush administration's up to something. I think they've got a robo-shark.
Yeah.
But, you know, but wait. Okay, just to give 2 minutes that it probably doesn't deserve to the shark story, can I ask a quick question?
Sure.
The shark was out where sharks live.
Supposed to be.
The shark was in his element. The 66-year-old dude who got eaten was, what, 150 feet off the beach swimming. If you jump into the tiger pen, do we blame the tiger? Yes, we take the tiger out and shoot it. And, you know, just right now, there's some Robert Shaw dude and some Roy Scheider dude and some, what's his name?
Richard
Dreyfuss guy out on a boat somewhere going, we're going to need a bigger boat. Because they're hunting that shark.
Well, you know, it's like, you know, and I'm sorry he passed away, but it's like the thing mine's going blank on his name all of a sudden, got bit by the stingray. It's like, look, if you don't pester the stingray won't bite you.
I know. You know and those little lessons, this is a relatively old house where we live, Luke, and it's that time of year, and the wasps are busily building their nests. And my girls came screaming out of their bedroom. Daddy, 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 quick, 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 kill it. There's a wasp in our bedroom. There's a wasp in our bedroom. And I just said, what's the wasp doing? He's sitting there in our bedroom. And I said, what are you doing? Well, scared. I said, what has he done to scare you? Nothing, except he's a wasp. I said, go back and think about that for a little while and get back to me.
Well, you know, it's like every once in a while we have something up here in the mountains, you know, where somebody, you know, has something involving a bear. And it's like, guess what? It's where he lives. You're invading.
I exactly. Because anybody who knows anything about the North American black bear, which, by the way, is the state animal of West Virginia, knows that they will do everything in their power not to get around a human being who has not done everything in their power to have him come around. Like, you know, well, like for bear season, a buddy of mine who hunts bears has one of these, you know, 55, 60-gallon trash cans that he just starts pouring, the old apple peelings and stuff like that into because it's just, it's bear heroin.
Bait.
Yeah.
It's bear bait.
Yeah. But if you don't invite the bear to live with it, to come and visit you,
yeah.
The bear, if you're out walking in the woods, will do everything in his power to get away from you, unless you're like an idiot and you say, oh, look at the cute little bear cub. Come here, baby. I want to pet you. You're so cute. You're just like a teddy bear at home. And then mama bear gets a little possessive about things.
It's like, how would you feel if the bear came in and decided to start playing with the kids? You wouldn't mind that, would you?
I know.
You know.
But I saw the shark attack and that. And in fact, our buddy Patrick up in Massachusetts wrote in and said, you know, I see the shark attack story and I get nervous. Here we go again.
It's like these always show up all of a sudden when something bad's happening that's important. All of a sudden we get shark attacks or we get cougar attacks.
Yeah, it's like at this point in time, whenever George walks out to the podium, there ought to be a sound system there that goes, dun-dun, dun-dun. Yeah.
Like I saw recently, sort of off topic, I saw recently about Roy Scheider passing away. And it was sort of like, man, that.
Oh, I didn't even know that. You've just shot my Friday night.
He passed away, I think, about 2-3 weeks ago.
I'll be darned. But so, you know, there's real news out there, but CNN is busily reporting the following. Prank promotes sex, booze after prom. Singer Winehouse arrested again, report says. Deadly snake found slithering on beach.
Oh, you saw the thing on another subject. You saw the thing where the White House is still fighting tooth and nail to keep the visitors' logs under wraps.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, and the judge says, look, it's a public building. Said you can't claim it's private property. It's a public building owned by the people.
I know. But meanwhile, do please bear in mind that a man who was building his man cave and had a bet with a buddy of his is now going to have to, his buddy, who didn't lose as much weight, according to CNN, is going to have to mow his lawn in a dress.
I'm sitting there watching. You know, sometimes, like I say, beside the main picture, they have, like, of course, about 10 or 12 top lines, you know what I mean, top news stories, I guess you'd call it. And most of the times you look at it and you go, maybe there's two in there that's news. And I'm sitting there going, don't you all have that headline news? Don't they have a website where you can put some of this crap up? Because most of the things you look at, you go there and you go, this shouldn't be up here. I mean, this is entertainment news, or this is you know, News of the Weird or whatever. This does not need to be honest news.
This is on. This came from the main site of CNN. It's a picture of a guy in a pink strapless dress with a pair of flip-flops on and faux pearls standing behind a push mower.
Honest to God. One thing I want to mention before I get off, I'm sorry. I saw tonight, depending on when it comes on in your area, on our PBS, Tavis Smiley tonight, his guest is Mr. Donahue, Phil Donahue.
Oh, that'll be good.
So I assume they're talking about Body of War.
And doesn't Bill Moyers have Reverend Wright on?
Mm-hmm. 20 minutes.
Yeah, I thought so.
So there's real news out there. You just have to, like I say, you have to hunt around for it. And tonight is, believe it or not, it's the season finale of Mr. Marr.
Oh.
He goes through two.
I so wish I still had HBO.
Well, if I say,
I'll have to wait for it to hit YouTube.
Yeah. But like I say, tonight is their season finale, and like I say, you wish. It's like, God, pay him some more money. Let's keep him on a little bit longer during the year, please.
And we have an observation.
Just when it gets getting good.
We have an observation that just rolled in, Luke. As far as our intelligence services being run by Wile E. Coyote, let us not forget our intelligence services were essentially organized and set up by former Nazis. Does that tell you anything?
You know us. We'll pick a loser every time. You know, it's like, who was it? I saw the thing for Charlie Rose tonight. Guess who his guest is speaking the other direction?
Who's that?
Negroponte.
Lord, I hope he's got his life insurance paid up.
I was going to say, keep the cameras on. Don't let anybody turn the camera off for any for 10 seconds. Lights go out, boom, boom. Lights come on, there's dead bodies all over the place.
One in the head, two in the chest. Isn't that how it's supposed to work?
Death Squad John strikes again.
These are amazing, deadly people. Luke, have yourself a wonderful weekend.
You too, bud.
Bye now.
See you off.
And let's wrap it up tonight with a picture of. Oh, but no. Okay, one last cop story. Fortunately, no blood was shed in this one, but it's still pretty equally stupid. There's a bunch of libertarians in the District of Columbia. And they do silly things like having flash mob at different places. This past weekend, they had a flash mob at the Jefferson Memorial, which is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. At midnight this past Saturday, to celebrate the birthday of their favorite founding father, of course, Thomas Jefferson. They gathered at the memorial. They all had an iPod. They all had their headphones in. There were no sound systems. And with their little earbuds in their little libertarian ears, they all danced around together at the Jefferson Memorial at midnight. They weren't doing anything wrong. The U.S. Park Police officer who showed up told them to leave. Some of the dancers argued with the officers about why they're being asked to leave. They say they were minding their own business, quietly dancing with headphones on to celebrate Jefferson's birthday, and they weren't breaking any laws, which, by the way, they weren't. And then Brooke Oberwetter, a 28-year-old, questioned why they were being harassed. Brooke Oberwetter was then handcuffed and taken into custody. Amazing. Just amazing. America has turned into the town from Footloose. Jiminy. And there's a, like I said, let's end on an up note by pointing out just how it is we got where we are. There's a House of Representatives candidate in Indiana named Tony Zirkel. He's trying to get the nomination for Indiana's 2nd Congressional District. And being as how he's a Republican and needs every vote, he didn't have any bones about going to the to deliver a speech to the American National Socialist Workers' Party. Shh, they're not socialists. They're Nazis. Here. Enjoy.
Educate and inform on the pornography industry and to pass out the books on the commentary on the life of Jesus.
Politics unusual. A local candidate for Congress spoke at a political rally of a different kind this weekend, a Nazi gathering to celebrate Hitler's birthday. Good evening. I'm Cindy Ward.
I'm Deborah Daniel. Jim has the night off. Republican Tony Zirkel spoke at the rally this weekend in Chicago.
The Republican Party calls the visit repulsive. WSBT's Dustin Gross spoke with Zirkel today. And Dustin, what did he tell you?
Well, see, that's the point. The Republican Party calls the visit repulsive. What the Republican Party, of course, finds repulsive is the fact that it's being reported on. So he shows up to celebrate Hitler's birthday with the Nazis, stands in front of a painting of Hitler, next to people wearing swastika armbands, and with a swastika flag, a Hakenkreuz, in the background. He said he'll speak before any group that invites him. Anything for a vote? Well, Zirkel's fighting back. He says, been getting a flood of emails and phone calls, some of which include death threats about my attempt to raise awareness of how the great porn dragon inspires Jews into pornography institution. What? Was he sitting around drinking liquor with Mel Gibson again or something? This is from his own website. I've been getting a flood of emails and phone calls, some of which include death threats about my attempt to raise awareness of how the great porn dragon, inspires Jews into pornography and prostitution. Isn't it fun when the rubber mask comes off and you see the Republican Party for what it is? I couldn't have that. This is another one of those stories that if you showed up to an editor and said, "Yeah, boss, I got a great story, a great short story idea here. Check it out. I'm going to take a Republican congressional candidate, and he's going to say, let's save our Jewish brothers and sisters from this tyrant king porn dragon before we get to another worldwide pogrom." Can't make it up. Can't make it up. But you see, as we pull toward the close of tonight's program, it is not necessary to stand in front of a picture of a khaki-clad Adolf Hitler, who, I remind you, according to the saint who is the founder of Opus Dei, was treated harshly by the world because he could not possibly have killed 6 million Jews. He couldn't possibly have killed more than 4 million. Yes, he said it. You don't have to have a Republican standing in front of a picture of a khaki-clad Adolf Hitler with Hakenkreuz red flags over his shoulder and men in black shirts with Nazi armbands to his left and his right. You don't have to have that in order to understand where America is today. You see, a great number of Americans think that the American National Socialist Workers' Party is some sort of fringe group. The only thing that makes it a fringe group is the fact that it stands out and, while psychotically, proudly, admits who and what it is. Because the vast majority of Americans don't understand that the underpinnings of most of the Republican Party are principles that were first elucidated by the National Socialist Workers' Party of Germany, the Nazis. Everything that we have talked about this evening has some sort of a relationship with fascism. Because while the Nazis called themselves socialists, what they were, and they freely admitted it, were fascists. Just like Benito Mussolini, who defined and invented the term. He defined fascism as the marriage between the state, the powers of the state, and the powers of the corporations into a perfect storm of authoritarian power. And that is the Republican Party. That is the party that would foist John McCain onto us come November. John McCain, who, in explaining away his lack of support for the Lilly Ledbetter law, explaining away the need in this country desperately for equal pay legislation for women, said that the problem is not women being improperly and unfairly underpaid, but the fact that women need more education and training. John McCain said, they need the education and training, particularly since more and more women are heads of their households, as much or more than anybody else, and it's hard for them to leave their families when they don't have somebody to take care of them. It's a vicious cycle that's affecting women, particularly in a part of the country like this, where mining is the mainstay. This is a comment that he delivered. Dear God, traditionally women have not gone into that line of work, to say the least. Of course, education and training has nothing to do with it. A woman who is hired to do the same job as a man is entitled to the same rate of pay as a man. This is who the terror-mongering, white-power, male-dominated society party, the Republican Party, is praying will be elevated to the presidency by a vast, undereducated, bigoted, deliberately misled electorate. Isn't it sad when, in order to succeed, a political party has to rely not on the hopes and dreams of voters, but on its deepest, darkest fears and terror? That's what the Republicans do, year in and year out. Oh, they'll run some ads saying, well, it's morning in America, Nancy. But they'll do so while turning out the lights all over the land and plunging people who have nothing more than their jobs and their families to uphold their human dignity, plunge those people into a world of fear and bigotry and prejudice. And that is how we have gotten from where we were to where we are. That's how you wind up with John McCain standing in New Orleans as part of his Forgotten America tour, saying to reporters that he didn't know if he would want to rebuild the lower Ninth Ward as president, saying, that is why we need to go, that is why we need to go back, is to have a conversation about what to do. Rebuild it, tear it down, you know, whatever it is. Of course, it goes without saying that his spiritual advisor, Pastor John Hagee, has said that the lower Ninth Ward was destroyed as a function of God's permissive will to punish people for how they have sex. I don't know if you realize it, but they're at war with us. The overarmed, hyper-terrorized police in this country are at war with us. The Republican Party that fearmongers and terrorizes with every word out of every Republican's mouth is at war with us. Who do I define as us? I define us as people who mind our own business and want nothing more than to go to work and come home and revel in the sweet freedoms that the Constitution, not some invisible God, but that the Constitution guarantees us, who want to raise our children right, who want to pass on the traditions of American freedom to them. And to do so knowing that those freedoms will remain sacrosanct for our children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren long after we are gone. And those keenings, those yearnings, those desires are anathema to the authoritarians and the thugs of the Republican Party. They just are. And Lord God, isn't it sad? But you are the America that is worth saving. You who work for a living, who carry this country on your back, who succeed in the face of every obstacle thrown up in your face by the authoritarians, the Republicans, the fascists. You are America. And I'm awfully glad, and I'm honored, and I'm privileged that you take time to join us here on the Horn. We had some tech problems, and I almost didn't come on the air tonight. But when I realized that there were people who would expect me to be here, I realized that I could do no less than to show up. Because this isn't work for me. This is an honor for me. I wish you all a very pleasant weekend. I hope you will all tune in at some point in the weekend, but for the first time through, at 9 p.m. Eastern Time for Night Sounds with Billy Shears Saturday evening. After that, it'll roll all weekend long. But it's awfully fun to hear it on the first go-round and be in the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com chat room. When we get the website squared away from the problems it's currently having, I hope perhaps you'll go by and use the PayPal button there if you can, if you're able, to help us keep the Horn on the air. We ask for, considering the size of our audience, a fairly modest amount, $2,000 a month, to meet our bills. At present, we are $500 and change away from meeting that goal, or thereabouts. If all of this means something to you, we sure would appreciate your support. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
America, and good morning, world. Welcome to Book, Chapter, and Verse
135 of Strictly Confidential. My name is Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio exclusively right here on listener-supported Head On Radio Network, also brought to you in part by Coal River Mountain Watch. That's crmw.net, Coal River Mountain Watch. Stop by Coal River Mountain Watch and have a look and see what mountaintop removal is doing to West Virginia. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Today is, in fact, Thursday, April 24th, 2008. So, indeed, if you are listening on a Thursday evening, April 24, 08, shortly after 9 p.m. Eastern Time, you are indeed listening to a live show, and you are more than welcome to call in and participate with myself and with the guest whom I'll be introducing shortly. The toll-free line is 877, the number 4, head-on. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON. If you have unlimited long distance, please use that. You'll save the studio a nickel or a buck. That's area code 304-658-3333, and that rings in West Virginia, 304-658-3333. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and there you're going to find links to all of the guests and to the audio archives from past shows, as well as our chat room, which is active as I speak, and a good evening to stop by. You'll find links at strictlyconfidentialradio.com to the main Head On Radio Network main site. You can find out about all of the other progressive programming on this network, of which I'm only a small part. There are links there also for Strictly Confidential's MySpace page and links to help you locate the music that you hear on the show. And welcome to a Thursday evening edition of Strictly Confidential. Tonight is a music night. We have an amazing man brought to us by our Director of Music Talent, Mr. Glenn Rivera. Glenn doesn't know of his title. He was just awarded it. Glenn, that's the title. You are now officially the Director of Music Talent. Welcome aboard. And thank you for bringing so many talented artists to this show. This evening's guest is Manny Parrish. He's more commonly known as Man Parrish. Man is considered to be a pioneer of electronic music and the hip-hop genres. And he, along with artists such as Kraftwerk, Art of Noise, Afrika Bambaataa, helped create and define the sound of hip-hop in the early 80s. He was an underground music scene icon in the 80s and 90s, and is one of the most important and influential figures in American electronic